Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the kitchen table in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys cooking up some fresh hot takes, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today it's time for, it's not a joke, we're not fooling you, Nerd Alerts for April.
Nerd Alerts! Yeah, no fooling, no April Fools.
Yeah, no April Fools. We really don't do that here, because April Fools can be kind of mean, and we try to be positive.
Yeah, what's your take, hot take on pranksters and pranks in general? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Depends on the prank. Pranks can be fun.
Yes.
But they can also be very mean.
True.
And bullies often use it as an excuse.
Well, it's just a joke, man.
To bully.
Why are you getting so mad?
Exactly. Yeah. There can be lighthearted things, but it can also be used for much, much malice.
Yeah. The pranks where everybody's in on it and nobody's real made the fool are the fun ones.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like those crazy, like the Canon cameras they kept doing over in Europe, where you get the little girl like carrying giant buckets that are super heavy, and then you get a normie to try and do it, and they're like, how is this little girl lifting that thing? Those are fun.
Yeah, and I like things like the classic office prank where you cover up the little LED thing on the mouse so their mouse doesn't work.
It's great.
And you're like, what the heck? Why is my mouse working?
Ah.
You know, and it's like, that's just...
You've been bamboozled.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right on.
But, you know, tax on chairs and stuff, that's just mean.
Yeah.
Anything that causes, like, harm or, like, a cleanup or anything.
Yeah, hurt feelings, no.
Yeah.
Mikey's weakness.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no pranks for this one. Also, I didn't plan that far ahead. I would have thrown in some faulty nerd alerts had I been more clever. But these are just fun. But it is time for nerd alerts. And I will talk nerdy to you.
Yes, we are going to the news desk where Mikey has the latest nerd alerts for you.
The positrons.
The positrons.
Actually, this one's for you, though, to start it off.
Oh.
We start off with trailers and things we get sneak peeks of.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that made me giggle the most was the return of the giant, the return of the legend, the myth, the tallest, palest redhead you ever did see. And that's Conan O'Brien must go.
Yes.
He must get out and explore the world. Holy crap.
They took one of the greatest segments of his Conan show, his TBS Conan show, and made it its own show.
And combined it with his podcast.
Yes.
It's all of his things combined into the thing you argue a lot on the podcast. He does the best.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just the trailer alone. I think Conan Without Borders was what it was called when it was part of the TBS show.
Yep.
But now they're calling it Conan Must Go. And it looks like the same thing, but it's different in the fact that he's going to visit a fan of his in a foreign country.
Yeah, so
he's international, apparently.
He's global now.
Yeah.
He has the podcast Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which is a great pick-me-up. And then the segment that's a part of that is Conan O'Brien Needs a Fan, where he just responds basically to, you know, the mailbag.
Uh-huh.
But apparently these are people that kept in touch with, and they're like, come visit us. And it's like the weirdest people, Iceland, Ireland, Thailand, and Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Thailand one looks hilarious because he's given stern ladies a hard time, which makes Conan happy.
The Argentina one looks hilarious because Jordan Slansky's there.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan Slansky was Conan O'Brien's, actually, it was so funny because the whole joke was no one was sure what he did.
Yes.
And everything seemed to be a bit with this guy, but the more and more I followed Conan and the more and more we've dug into it, or just listening to him, you dig into it, it really seems like this Jordan Slansky guy is just like that.
Oh, yeah. It's him, but it may be turned up versions of him, but it's absolutely coming from him.
It's one of those things where if Jordan Slansky is acting like that, he should get an Emmy or Oscar. So I think he's just that antagonistic with Conan. I think you're right. I think he knows what he's doing, but at the same time, that's what he's like.
Oh, for sure.
He knows how to yes and his antagonism of Conan.
Just like Conan knows how to sit into the awkward, which when you're going abroad, he's a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And he's Conan O'Brien. Like, you know, if you know him, he's famous and he's hard to miss. But if you don't know him, it's like, who made a person like that? He'd be the first one to tell you. But he always has a fun perspective when he goes to new places because he has the comedy brain.
Yeah.
And I was in the mood. I need a new travelogue, like Somebody Feed Phil. You know, we love those kind of
That's a great one, too.
When they're heartwarming travelogues with the comedy brain, I think that a little extra spice. So that's why I was excited for this trailer, too.
I'm very excited for it. It's great. There's so many. If you guys haven't seen some of his segments from the Conan show, there's so many great ones of the Conan Without Borders. But one of my favorite ones ever is when he's in Korea with who's the actor who from Walking Dead? His name escapes me right now. I'm sorry, sir. but that's really funny. Because they go to like a bathhouse and they go to like a temple.
And it's also like it's the Korea, like the socially structured, and Conan's pushing against it in the politest comedic way he can. He's like, "Oh, you don't want me to do this? Okay." But yeah.
And that, isn't the monk has like an iPhone and an Android phone?
Yeah. And he's like, "What?"
And he's like, "What are you doing?
Monks don't have technology. I was lied to about monks." And that's true because you have that reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's delightful when he gets into those foreign situations.
I love it.
So, Nerd Alert, tangent question for you. Where would you like to be dropped for a week to get, like, foreign experience?
Me?
Yeah, if you were Conan in this situation and your producer said, pick a spot you want to go. Or pick a, you know, where would you go to learn a perspective of life?
Well, Mikey, I just returned from a trip to Europe.
Hell yeah.
Where I went to France, Belgium, and Germany.
Schwanky.
It was a whole lot of fun. I liked all of those places. But I've been there, so you're hitting me with this. I'm not going to say put me back there.
Yeah.
That's where I just was. As much fun as I had and as much as I enjoyed it.
Fair enough.
But I have to say, I really want my next trip to be back to the homeland. I am half Italian origin, so I would like to go to Italy. And I would like to go to the places in Italy where my family origin from.
That'd be cool.
Which is actually on the boot. I don't have any Sicilian in me, so that would be Milan and Naples.
There you
go. I would like to visit my grandmother's family's from Milan and my grandfather's family's from Naples.
And those are just pretty middle of the boot, right? That's not like toe or heel.
Milan is all the way near is very north.
Okay.
It's closer to Switzerland. My grandmother was redheaded.
Oh.
And Naples is in the middle-y part of it. But yeah. So I would like to go to those places.
That'd be awesome.
And see what was going on. And very much, my look, I think, would very much fit in there.
Oh, yeah. You could go fully culturally appropriate and get the whole outfit, the loose linen clothes, the walking cane, you know, just for walking the streets.
I just might get a whole bunch of, like, an Adidas jumpsuit.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, at least two chains.
Yeah.
One of Christopher, one of David, you know.
And just walk around there. I got to tell you, though, and we've mentioned this on the podcast before. I got to tell you. And this is more for our producer, Scott, in the booth over there. Scott always accused me of having the musical taste of a 16-year-old girl.
Ah.
But
it is a fun bit.
During my time in Berlin, I found out that I have the musical taste of a Berliner.
Estein Berliner? You're a donut?
Yeah, I'm a donut. Okay. Just like JFK.
Okay, so what kind of music makes you a donut?
But no, it's all like oomps, 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 oomps. It's all like clubby,
yes,
like Dua Lipa-y. I think I heard some Demi Lovato happening.
It's best music, bro.
It's best music, bro. Even at breakfast.
No.
We're at breakfast in Berlin.
That's awesome.
And the restaurant is like green neon, and you're sitting there at breakfast. You're bleary-eyed having your coffee and your juice. And your croissant.
Maybe,
And it's like, unts, 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 unts.
Maybe that's the German version of Hair of the Dog, is just a little bit of club in the morning to, you know, help the memories, you know, settle in and then go about your day.
I guess. You know what's funny, too, is that when we were in Berlin, it was St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Oh, fun, yeah.
And right next to our hotel, there was an Irish bar. And they were St. Paddy's Daying it up.
Oh, everybody's like Irish on St. Paddy's
Day. They had those, like, Dr. Seuss hats that were green and white and orange.
That does seem kind of surprising because, as far as I know, St. Paddy's Day is purely an American thing.
Not in Berlin.
But I also know Germans love like the cultural festivities, like, yeah, for everybody, yeah, like any excuse to party. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome.
They're having a good time over there. They'll tell you, while I was in Berlin, I heard more British accents than I heard anywhere else in Europe. So there's a lot of Brits there.
What
well.
If you're just really bad at understanding the German accent? No, that's fascinating.
No, we're at one little cafe in Germany. I don't know what cafe is in German. It's not cafe. Maybe it is cafe. Just anyway. And
Coffeehausen.
Coffeehausen, yeah. And there's a group of Brits there, and they had those, like, that accent like the fun marketing girl on Ted Lasso has.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that really, like, city-y,
yeah,
almost Cockney.
Saying in it a bunch.
In it, yeah. And stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is fun. Because I was just listening to, I was totally eavesdropping on their conversation because it was so, they all talked like her.
Yeah,
and
that's
it was
awesome.
So thick. Yeah.
You don't even remember what they're saying. It's just like, no. Yeah, that sounds so neat.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And I was eating a Berliner at that place.
See, serendipity.
They had those. I was looking. I was like, oh, they have jelly donuts there. And it literally said Berliner on it. And I was like, I have to.
They didn't do like JFK's profile and like chocolate icing. Okay, good. No.
Actually, the one I got was cream filled, not jelly filled. But
yeah. I learned about that historical fact from a stand-up comedian, Eddie Izzard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Eddie Izzard.
He's like, yeah, he's a donut, man. They thought it was the coolest thing. See, comedy educates you.
Yeah. I think the thing, for those of you who don't know, he said, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Yes.
And he should have said, Ich bin ein Berlinin or something like that. Something different.
One conjugation
off.
Yeah,
he used the conjugation wrong. So he said, I am a jelly donut.
Which is their name for that. It's their brand of jelly donut.
Yeah, it's like I guess Berlin claims, I don't know if they invented it, but they claim the filled donut, the donut that is filled with some kind of jelly.
Did you see any signs purporting as such when you were over there?
Well, I mean, I saw that those donuts were called Berliners.
There you go. I wasn't sure if you passed a donut shop that said, home of the original.
I didn't, though. You know what I will tell you, though, about Berlin?
Please.
There's a donor shop every block.
Oh, yeah, the shaved meat stuff.
Gyros, donors, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I'm not even kidding. Every single block. I don't know how they stay in business, because every single block, there was one.
And there's probably a bottle shop every single block, too. So it goes together.
But every single one, you'd see, then they put that yummy meat right in the window, and you'd go by, like, we're driving in the bus, and, like, every single block, and be like, oh, that guy's using a giant knife. Ooh, that guy has an electric shaver.
It was
you know?
Best, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like.
If you can do that to a giant slab of meat, I guess you can. Okay, yeah. It's so funny to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm glad you had such a great time.
Yeah.
But speaking of shaved meat or giant hunks of meat, it kind of ties in somehow.
Okay.
We'll make it work. Giant hunks of meat are features in Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, okay.
There's your tie-in. But what about Dungeons & Dragons, dear listener? Lego is doing a partnership with Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yes. I've seen this.
Yeah. So they've been doing like teaser images with the logos. And they've done like little teaser videos. We haven't gotten a full scope of it yet because it's actually coming April 6th. So either prepare for it if you're listening to this in time or go find it if it already happened. But yeah, it's a full-on collab. They're doing Lego sets that are based on D&D models like the inn that your party meets at and the dungeon. Yeah. But they're also, with the release of it, they're doing a one-shot with a DM and six players that I guess are going to use these sets to role-play a game?
Yeah.
It's not too clear on what specifics are going to happen in this one-shot event, but this is how they're choosing to release it, is to do some live play.
Why are they doing this to me? Lego's turning me into the meme. Take my money!
Yeah. Just a big old wad of cash. It's like, it's the two things that I love. How I did know. It not
they,
happen before?
They're doing the same thing they did to me when they first started making Star Wars Legos. When they first started making Star Wars Legos,
yes.
It was before I had kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't care. I bought so many of those stupid things.
Just, yeah, it was because Legos are awesome and Star Wars is awesome.
Yeah.
Now Lego is awesome and Dungeons & Dragons is awesome. It's so hot right now. But here's my funny question for you. So what do you think would be more expensive? Buying the Lego Dungeons & Dragons sets to actually use as like game board pieces to run your module on?
Uh-huh.
Minifigs and all? Or a Warhammer 40K army?
Oh, wow.
That was the closest, the would you rather sort of style I came up with.
Both are very expensive. Like Legos are almost like a dollar a brick.
Almost.
Like if a set is like 235 bricks, it's almost $235 usually.
Yeah, something like that.
It's something crazy like that. And the Warhammer is just as bad. I don't, you know what? Lego's easier to deal with, though.
For sure.
Because as much as I love Warhammer and I love making the models, you have to, like, cut them off the sprues, glue them together, prime them, paint them.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more time-consuming.
Yeah, yeah.
Lego's, you know, you just open the box, open the manual, and start building.
Get the building,
yeah.
That does make me wonder, though, because there are, like, definitely Lego nerds out there. I try to be one of them, but I'm not clever enough to, like, innovate with Lego. I have to have the instructions.
Oh yeah.
But I do know, like, once these model instructions are out, I'm pretty sure those people are going to go to like the pick a brick links and do like color coded, like, this is my Hufflepuff Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah,
like world, village, and party.
There's so much stuff like that. It's crazy to me. Like the dioramas people build and stuff. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Like has nothing. There's no Lego set for it, and there's tons. You like the pick-a-bricks and stuff. There's tons of people who put things out there that, you know, get these bricks.
That's
and
it.
You can make this thing that looks like this. Because Lego doesn't make any military stuff because it's against their company policy.
Yeah, yeah. It all has to be like sci-fi if it gets close.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why, like, I think Mega Bloks makes, like, you know, World War II ones and stuff.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
But Mega Bloks aren't as good. Sorry, Mega Bloks.
Hot take.
But there is a whole cottage industry of World War II Lego.
Oh,
and,
really?
Like, how to, like, make them and
fun.
And there's all kinds of people that make, like, decals to make the uniforms for the guys.
I believe it.
There's a whole bunch of people who make helmets that'll work and rifles and stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's pretty crazy.
I can only imagine that same sort of nerd mod mentality will come to Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And just like, because we already have the creature manual, which is sort of the rough guide, you know?
Yeah.
Now just make that.
Yeah, one of my first Lego sets... I'm going to put this to you, too, if you can remember what your first Lego set is.
Close, but yeah.
One of my first... I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But I know that my first Lego set was in the Lego Knights world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember my biggest Lego set was that Lego Knights castle.
With the drawbridge.
Yeah, the one that's legendary at this point. That I think they made like a... like kind of a reboot.
Yeah, they brought them back.
Yeah, it's a little updated, but it was in homage to that original set, which I had, which of course I played with and lost pieces and didn't know that it would be so valuable at the time.
Who knew? Yeah.
But do you recall like what genre your first Lego set was?
Legos were always my money because they were expensive. Legos and video games, if I wanted them, I had to do chores. So like that stuff does stick in my brain
because cool.
It was like,
yeah,
I paid for this. Mm-hmm. But it was the Lego pirate ship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it was fun to build, I remember, but the thing that, like, the memory it stuck with me is, like, the sails were always a pain in the butt because they were, like, the late 80s, early 90s, like, plastic pleather, like, was brittle, but also, like, flexible.
Yeah.
So they were kind of crappy.
Yeah, I recall.
Yeah, and then doing the strings between all the masts, it was too feebly for my little fingers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember the pirate ship.
Wow.
Red and white sails. Because it was like 180. It was expensive.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks
of allowance.
That was a good kit. Yeah, it must have been a couple weeks of allowance. And it was the big ship. It wasn't like the... Because the thing I loved about Legos that they did, I think they still do this now.
Yeah.
They had like the marquee one, like
the big
ship.
Yeah.
And then they would have like a little... thing for the poor kids.
Here's the little side piece that looked kind of... Now, it, like... It was bigger in my mind, but it was the OG, three mast, two sail.
Well, just like that original castle was way littler than it actually was. But I remember that they also sold like a tower.
Yeah. And that was like around the time when they figured out you could sort of latch the foundations together to attach them all. Yeah. It was like, oh, they have hinges. This is so revolutionary.
Those little, I don't mean to knock on poor kids. That's not really what I meant. Really what it is it's what your grandparents would get you
Yeah.
You were asking for the big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And your grandparents would go to the store with all intentions and then see that sticker price and be like, huh? And then they'd look to the left and see the little one. And they'd give you that. They're like, here's what you asked for. And you're like, this isn't what I asked for.
It's got pirates on it. Put it together.
It's like, okay. And it's still Lego. I just wanted 800 more pieces.
No, absolutely. I get it. And like, but it is also like kind of just growing up, like it was kid stuff. Like most of the Legos I played with were the bin that my family had. Like my brother got sets that got destroyed and put in the bin. Yeah. My sister had sets that got destroyed, put in the bin. And then it's like, here's the Lego bin, you know, go nuts and then buy sets as you would want them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I missed that Lego bin. That would be worth hundreds of dollars now, too.
I know, right?
At least a half price books.
Yep.
But the one last thing I'm excited about as far as Lego and Dungeons and Dragons goes is if this means we might get some sort of media in the line of the Lego movie or Lego Batman.
Oh, wow.
This is pure speculation. There was nothing in the announcement about this. Exactly, because like that comedy from those movies is wonderful.
Yeah.
I love Lego Batman. I love the Lego movie. And you put those quips in a party adventure that's, you know, your typical role-playing group, that has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Especially with making it, like, the Lego Builder modular. Like, no, this monster just showed up. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just could be crazy.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
But in the meantime, build some Dungeons & Dragons sets.
I would argue, though, the Lego movie and Lego Batman movie, those fall into the category of have no right to be so good.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And just like everything is awesome, should be the most annoying song on the planet.
It's not, though.
But it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody saw that movie coming and it was like, what? This is a masterpiece.
Unfortunately, though, stuff like that is why Hollywood keeps going, like, what else can we?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't understand.
Transformers, you like that too. GoBots, let's go. No, it's Legos. We like them because they respect the little guy too.
It also wasn't just because it was Legos, it's because it was masterfully done.
Lord and Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
Oh, excellent script and just a great story. It just happened to be made with bricks and Will Ferrell and super glue. So funny. That Craggle is the bad guy and it's super glue.
It's great.
So simple yet so epic.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of simple and epic, in an age of light, a darkness rises.
Oh.
And that is the tagline from the teaser we're getting these days for The Acolyte.
Oh, yes.
The latest Star Wars series to be coming to Disney Plus in June. June 4th specifically. But this was we've seen this on the slate for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been
there. It was filmed over 2022, 2023, and it's just now seeing the light of day. I think that's mainly because this is part of the slowdown.
Slowdown, yeah.
But I was happy to see this trailer.
I was as well.
What's your two cents?
Well, I don't know if this falls into the realm we were talking about. There's kind of this slight revisionism or giving us what we originally wanted that we weren't given. And to me, this looks like what we thought episode one would be.
I gotcha.
The Jedi at the height of their power confronting a new threat.
A new threat. Yeah, because here's the setup. Here's the elevator pitch. The Acolyte is set at the end of Star Wars franchise High Republic era, approximately 100 years before episode one. So close enough to the time period we're talking about. So, but about 100 years before Phantom Menace. He's a respected Jedi Master investigating a series of crime that bring him into conflict with a former Padawan learner and reveal sinister forces.
Yeah, and that's kind of what me going into episode one thought we would get. And not a Jedi's on the wane being over, you know, it was more like
sort of after the fact-ish.
Yeah, and I see what George Lucas was doing there, and once they did the Clone Wars shows and he kind of was able to explain himself with the help of Filoni a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I'll always die on that hill that the Clone Wars animated series made the prequels make sense.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely, more context and fleshing out that world.
Yeah. And they really help it out. But even with those still were that world was a, you know, Jedi on the decline, Jedi so full of themselves that they couldn't see what was happening.
Yeah.
And a lot of us Star Wars fans thought with episode one, we'd see, you know, the great Jedi that Obi-Wan was kind of making us think about, you know.
Exactly.
And this looks like we're kind of in that realm, in that world, of Jedis at the height of their power, the true protectors of the Republic,
mm-hmm.
and Daphne Keene's in it.
Exactly.
That's X-22.
Yeah, from Logan.
Yeah.
Also, Rue from Hunger Games. That's Amanda Stenberg. She's the main. She's May, the former Padawan mm-hmm. that was mentioned in the blurb. But I'm with you. For as familiar as this time period is, familiar as all the set pieces and items are, these are a lot of fresh faces and sort of. It looks like a new story. This looks like mm-hmm. Star. Not, I don't know if it would call it Star Wars Legends, but like the just the one offs. The like
right.
Here's your galaxy story. Here's your fringe story.
It's like those Dark Horse and. Tales of the Old Republic.
Exactly.
Comics,
that's what I'm looking for.
Which I loved. I love those things. I thought those were great. Yeah, I got my fingers crossed. It looks like it might be good, especially since we often talk about, you know, give us new stories. There doesn't look like there's a lot of stunt casting in here either. Like the people that they have, we know them from stuff.
Yeah.
But there's none of that, like, let's jam Kevin Hart in here. offense to Kevin. I know I keep banging on him, but no offense to him, but still.
It could be just the podcast bit now. Like, friend of the podcast, Kevin Hart. We love you. I'm probably smaller than Kevin Hart, so mm-hmm. we would have a lot to talk about. The only really big name I noticed, and it made me super happy to see, was Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah.
We get Trinity from Matrix being a Jedi Master, which seems like, oh, yeah, that's... Who got that easy paycheck in the meetings? Like, is Carrie Ann Moss around? It's like, oh, genius. Mm-hmm. Make that guy Employee of the Month.
And then Yoda's going to be in here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got to be. Because Yoda's only like, what, 700 years old now?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, what did he say in the movie? 900 years? 800 years old. How would it... You will look this good. I forget how old he said he was. I'm a bad Star Wars fan right now. 900 years old you will be? You look this... I forget what he said.
No, it is 900 years.
He said he was 900,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. So he does exist in this time period.
Yeah, yeah.
Which brings me to a controversy about it, but I'll get to that in a second.
Oh.
Because there are a couple more fun people in this cast. Manny Jacinto is in here, who played Jason Mendoza from The Good Place.
Oh.
Who you know, he's the Miami Dolphins real dumb guy fan.
Yeah.
But because he was so good as the dumb guy in The Good Place, mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see him in here because he's playing a former smuggler. He is like our Han Solo.
Ah.
And he has that sort of like the bad guy with the heart of gold mentality from The Good Place.
Yeah,
I just really like him.
Yeah.
I hope he's not going to be as goofy as he was in The Good Place because that was very silly.
Yeah.
And this looks a little bit more serious.
We might get a Chris Pratt thing.
Maybe.
Just like, remember when he was casting Guardians, everyone was like, the dumb guy from Parks and Rec?
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, he could be the next badass. That would be awesome to see. Oh, and then the controversy that I was talking about.
Mm.
You were mentioning Yoda, but apparently the nerds, they're not getting upset about woke stuff, so good job to the other people. But there is controversy because... It deals with the idea that it's retconning existing Star Wars lore by having Sith in this time period.
Well, what? No.
This is based on the specific prequel quote from Ki Adi Mundi, member of the Jedi Council, in which he declared that it was impossible that the Sith were attacking. As he said, the Sith have been extinct for a millennium.
Okay.
Directly in dialogue, Sith can't be alive here.
Mm.
That's what the nerds are about. These are Star Wars nerds we're talking about. We're talking about the pedants and the sticklers.
Mm-hmm.
Easily defended, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe she's not a Sith.
That could be it. So that's funny because they haven't actually said. I mean, that's what everybody is assuming. New threat, this time period, Sith.
Yeah.
But we don't actually know.
It doesn't always have to be a Sith.
Doesn't always have to be.
Yeah.
But the argument against it is just because the Sith were not around in mass like the old Republic days
mm-hmm.
Does not mean that they do not exist and hiding in the shadows.
Yeah, that's true, too, is that he could have been talking about the Sith Empire.
Yeah.
Which was a whole big thing in the like Knights of the Old Republic and stuff.
Yeah. And this there was an article defending it in Forbes, of all places. I was like, what? But this is a Star Wars nerd at heart because it seemed like he had to write this article. But he's like... he also states, then the quote is being given by a guy who did not know there was an entire Sith conspiracy happening under the council's nose.
That's true.
So you can't even take his word for
That's
it.
That's true.
It's what a council member knows, and he's been sitting in the high tower.
Yeah.
So props to Forbes for
having...
Yeah, I know. I was like, what?
Aren't you supposed to be telling me what to invest in?
I know. And they're telling me to invest in the new Acolyte, because even if you're mad that, oh, Sith can't be around, Forbes says money's on, they can. The most random
buy,
of sources.
Sell. Who's that guy? Who's that guy, that bald guy on, like,
oh,
TV?
Oh, yeah. John Ramsey or whatever. So, yeah. Dave Ramsey.
Whatever, yeah. Buy, sell. Ah, honk. He's got all...
I always think of the Bulldog. Bulldog from Frasier is who I always think of. But he was a sports guy. Well, but yeah. So we might get... I mean, I'm happy to see... We do get to see the red lightsaber at the end of the trailer. Mm-hmm. And then we get to see all kinds of colors of Jedi sabers light up in response to it. And that's sort of our fade to black cliffhanger moment. It is a cool trailer. Like I said, it's familiar things, but it's all fresh. And you're like, I know these things, but I don't know them.
And I literally first saw it on Daphne Keene's feed, because I literally follow her because I want to see if they're going to do X-22.
Yeah. Well, there's so many rumors. I mean, Wolverine's back in the chats again, which is awesome.
She's only 19 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
There's plenty of runway to do an X-22.
And just to see her in this, because we've talked about young actors on this podcast before, and it's kind of hard to find a young actor that can also like exist in a superhero movie, because that's a little bit extra larger than life. Mm-hmm. But she crushed it as the young cub to the lone wolf of Logan.
I think that would be awesome, because that's a pre-existing character that, I mean, if you're looking for... I'm looking for a strong female character to put in Hollywood. That's a pre-existing one that's been around since the 90s.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, yeah, with Wolverine ties.
Yeah.
Which is just awesomeness.
Yeah.
It actually kind of ties into what I was going to bring up next. We mentioned it with the Star Wars. Like, the slowdown is happening. And that's in general with Star Wars, but I also think superheroes, too.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about this? This was the hot take I was kind of thinking up, because it'll lead into this, too, as well. We've mentioned the old school like TV actor guild versus the film theater actor guild, and how is there always like, oh, you do TV, you aren't as qualified.
Oh yeah, like in the 70s and stuff. Yeah,
I think there's now like a Hollywood... I don't know, stink may be too strong of a word, but I think there is like a, oh, you do superhero movies, I do cinema. Like, I think there may be that divide.
Maybe, perhaps.
I may be reading into this, but it's Jake Gyllenhaal is the reason for this thought.
Oh.
We talked about him because of the Roadhouse reboot that is causing all kinds of crazy headlines, because it looks like it's going to be terrible and awesome at the same time. So staying
Wasn't
true
that
to the,
what Roadhouse was?
Staying true to the original. I don't know why anybody is surprised. But he is in the news again because of Roadhouse. But... because he's doing the press cycle, they're always asking him the random, here's my interview question. And one of those is, what would you think about playing Batman? Because Jake Gyllenhaal would make, like, especially Roadhouse Jacked, does have that Bruce Wayne, like,
for sure,
tortured persona.
Yeah.
He has the dark Donnie Darko vibe.
Yeah, for sure.
But he was real polite about it. He said, oh man, that's a classic. It's an honor, I guess, speaking to be considered of it. But he says, speaking of playing roles that other incredible actors have played in the past, when I think about it, I'm going to play Iago in Othello with Denzel Washington. And I think about like the histories of actors that have played roles throughout time in theater. And I'm intimidated by that. So that's the first level. That's what I'm working on right now, referring to Othello. But of course, it would be an honor to be Batman. Those types of things in those roles are classic. It seems sort of like very friendly KGPR, like, Batman's cool, but I like... It seems hard for people to find a niche. Like, everybody's played the role, and it seems like with superhero movies now, they're kind of defining. Like, I don't think anybody could be Iron Man now that Robert Downey Jr. has done that.
Kind of true, yeah.
Pattinson's doing Batman right now, and he's the fifth one and kind of struggling. We love it, but it's just another Batman, you know? So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting that he had that response.
That is an interesting response. But... Denzel Washington's doing Othello?
Yeah.
As a movie?
Yeah. And Iago is going to be played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
I am on board for that one.
Denzel Washington is the... Oh, wow. I mean, he's won awards and everybody knows him and can do impressions of him, but he always blows me away. Like, he's one of those like, oh, you are that good.
Yes, he's so good.
Yeah. Equalizer 3, it's best movie this year.
So good. Yeah, that's the thing, too. That's like, you know, John Wick adjacent.
Yeah.
But... Keanu, I love you, but
You're not Denzel Washington.
That is my hot take. We could have that. Well, I'll have to plan that. Maybe we can do that next Nerd Alerts or our next assumption grab bag. We can do John Wick versus Equalizer 3. That's or Equalizer in general. Mm-hmm. That's a fun debate.
Yeah.
And just speaking of Batman, the happy news to balance out the caginess of Jake Gyllenhaal. Colin Farrell has given us news about The Penguin. It's going to be incredibly violent. It's going to be really heavy.
Oh, yeah, he's doing his own movie, right?
It's a series for Max.
Oh, that's right.
So it is between the movies. The movies are going to be Batman-focused, and then we're getting The Penguin as sort of the filler between. And he's just reporting that it's really heavy. It's really violent. Not to say he didn't have fun, but he is enjoying himself, and it is darker than the PG-13 Batman that we got.
Oh, wow.
I guess because it's HBO TV, they were always a little bit more risque in different ways. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like that's what we're getting. And The Penguin is currently in production. So I'm excited to see that. What's interesting is that with the delay, even The Penguin is pushed back, and we aren't going to see that until 2025. So it's in the hidden in between the lines, but I really do think the slowdown is in full effect. So. Yeah. I'll have to find some other Nerd Alerts that aren't superheroes.
Yeah. I really like that take on the Penguin of making it a mafia guy.
Yeah.
Where, like, the Penguin is like Jimmy Two Sheets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, two times or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that it's like they made it one of those mafia nicknames.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of being like some campy, I'm a guy obsessed with penguins.
Yeah, and it's almost Dick Tracy absurd, but just before that line.
Yeah. I like how they were doing the best they could to make this ridiculous stuff fit in to as real as it could get.
Yeah.
Like we saw how Tim Burton went all the way to like Campville.
Yeah, with Danny DeVito and the black goo that's forever traumatized in my brain, the black goo coming out of his mouth. It's like, that's the grossest thing I've ever seen.
But yeah, it's neat to see, you know, that take on it. So I'm interested to take in this series because I think it might be a good, like, mafia adjacent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The underbelly of Gotham. Yeah. We want the underbelly of Star Wars. We love the underbelly stories, especially when there's a good guy somewhere in there. But yeah, you couldn't even recognize Colin Farrell in the movie. It was great. It's like, that's him? The fat mafia schlubby guy? Yeah.
He's one of the great ones. I like that guy a lot.
He's the best. Here's a little bit to balance out the bummer news that the superhero stuff is slowing down. Mm-hmm. Indie films are getting a boost.
Oh, that's good.
Which is kind of, it's good and a broad statement. So more specifically, here's the neat part about it. Neon, the studio that backed Oscar winners Anatomy of a Fall and Parasite, have ironed out a deal with Waypoint Entertainment, the production company behind The Favorite and The Nice Guys, to specifically bring more mid-budget movies to the big screen, focusing specifically on $10 million-ish budget range. But specifically, like what I've talked about on the podcast, we're missing the DVD, like not necessarily the straight-to-DVD movies, but like the movies that were in theaters for 3 weeks and then crushed it on DVD.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the sleeper gems that weren't the blockbusters, but were the mid-tier that are excellent. Like The Nice Guys that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
That's Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling in a mob movie that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And so they're specifically putting money into this lane that I do think is missing. That's exciting to hear. So we are getting more indie level nerds up and coming stuff rather than in place of the big superhero smashes.
That's wow. It's interesting how the pendulum swings back and forth historically with almost everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like it's doing it with cinema too. And you got to think about it. Cinema has only been around for what, like 100 years, really?
About that. the talkies, anyway.
Yeah. Like there haven't been that many swings, but it looks like, and I think Quentin Tarantino is going to be excited because he wrote a whole entire book about it. But the first, I know they say like the first summer blockbuster was Jaws, but I would argue though, before that you had these insane, huge, like the Cleopatra movie with Liz Taylor and, you know, those kind of big giant epic movies. Those were happening in like the 60s era. And then they kind of got taken over by these 70s indie movies that Tarantino wrote a whole book about.
Yeah, Dog Day Afternoon, the real cinema, like, here's the real streets kind of stuff. You
know, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Taxi Driver,
the motorcycle movie with Fonda.
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it swung back to the 80s blockbusters.
Yeah.
With the Star Warses and Jaws and all of that kind of stuff, which I would argue harken back to the blockbusters before that.
For sure.
And now it's, and then it seemed like in the 90s, you got the Miramax, films. And, but the
your New Line Cinemas.
The New Line Cinemas. Yeah. You got the rise of Tarantino and Kevin Smith and things like that.
For sure.
That's the swing back. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, we swing back to these blockbusters again with these
Spider-Man, X-Men, and the Marvel.
Yeah. And now it seems like it's swinging back to these indies again.
That's crazy.
Can you see the pattern there? Am I crazy?
No, I mean, it sounds simple when you phrase it out like that, but I mean, it is that pattern. And it's crazy that we're sort of in the transition.
Yeah, and super good for my kids who are going to film school now.
That's exactly it. And here's the other fun thing, because I said that Neon was the production distribution studio that's teaming up with Waypoint Entertainment.
Yeah.
Neon, not only are they like, you'll see the Neon sign come up as the title card before a whole bunch of awesome movies, mm-hmm. but the Neon was a production company started by the same people that founded Alamo Drafthouse.
Oh, wow.
So they started the theaters and they said, okay, now we're going to start making movies. Yeah, and so Neon is Alamo Drafthouse Associated.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And so this is the company that says, hey, we want to put money where our mouth is and essentially fund the movies we would like to see in our theater.
Yeah, they love movies too, though. Yeah.
And they love that, like, oh, you didn't see it because the blockbuster was out and this was the also ran, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. I love Alamo Drafthouse so much.
That's it.
I know the food's expensive and not that great, but... But I don't care. Just the pre-rolls that they do.
It's the best.
Are the best. That tie into the movie.
They're all themed, and you can tell it's made by a nerd that's like, either it has the list of the things they have to go pull from or knows it.
No, it's great.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And the food's hit or miss. Just get the bottomless popcorn, though.
Yeah. No, yeah. Though I have to fight with my wife because she doesn't like that. She doesn't like the butter on it. But I'm like, it's real butter. It's not that fake butter.
Yeah, it's gourmet butter.
Yeah, it's real butter. So good.
And then finally, some video game news some fun stuff to ring us out here on our Nerd Alerts. So Redemption Road Games is coming out with a new game. They are a new company on the scene. They don't have too much of a bibliography. What would you, a gamography?
Well, I guess so. Videography?
Videography.
Yeah. Well, no, that's
video gamography?
Video gamography?
Discography?
I don't know.
Uh-oh, I have to look up a new ography word. But anyway, there's a game coming out for PC and later for consoles, but for PC first. Sometime in the next quarter, it's called Kingmakers.
Ooh.
Here's the blurb. Journey back to the 14th century England and engage in medieval battle with modern weapons and vehicles in this brutal action-packed trailer for Kingmakers. They're talking about the trailer here. But it's essentially, do you know the game Mountain Blade, where you can sort of have like cavalry face off against each other and you can have like actual English, British, medieval swords and fighting.
Yeah.
This takes that concept and adds the ability to also have AK-47s and tanks and basically all weaponry from modern to 14th century England.
Oh, wow.
And not only can you do high-level sky-view troop commands, like full battle spread, you can also go first-person into it and do Call of Duty style.
No way.
With your gun and take out horsemen and bow and arrow archers.
That's crazy.
And apparently set it up to your heart's intent.
Okay, so you could just play it straight.
Straight.
And then put yourself as one of the footmen.
Exactly.
Going, oh, wow.
And the general who's saying, okay, you know, left flank advance, right flank advance.
Like
and then
those Total War games.
Exactly.
Which were super fun.
Yep, this does both levels, sky view and all the way down.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool.
I just love the idea. It seems like it would have been easy money already for a video game industry, but like it's the nerds with toys. Like you have the army toys and you have the G.I. Joes versus the Star Wars. You know, you got to make them match somehow. This seems like that, but on first person shooter level.
That seems really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exciting. I always liked those Total War games. I used to play in Rome Total War. And then there was... There's still, you have Steam, right?
Yes.
So I think it's still on there. I think it's still on Steam. It's an old, old game, and I think it's only kept alive on Steam. But it's called Close Combat.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, they're World War II games.
It's a little top-down game.
Okay.
And it's basically, it's almost like playing a historical miniatures game with World War II guys, because it's top-down, and you have basically, like, it's, you know, some squads and a couple tanks. It's not very big.
Okay.
But you get to command the guys around.
Hell yeah.
And move them around, and just you're supposed to, like, take this village, or it's real simple, because mm-hmm. it's from, like, the 90s. But it's so much fun, because it is so much like playing with action figures.
It's called Close Combat?
Close Combat, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to check that one out.
It reminds me of those, I don't know if you ever put your foot in this world, but they used to have these Avalon Hill games that they're on maps that were little hexes.
Yeah.
And then you had little cardboard counters that were hex-shaped that fit on the hexes.
Sort of Risk adjacent.
Yeah, Risk, and you, but it was like a higher level, nerdier level. Mm-hmm. And you just moved, like, one of them was like, this is a tank, and like, this is a squad of troops. And you just move them around against your friend. And it's like that, but computer game.
I believe it.
So you can see the little guys like running, and you're like, go! And they'll start taking fire, and you're like, no!
No, you'll see come back, retreat!
Hit. Yeah.
This seems like it has that element to it, but also the ability to be the guy running ahead.
I know, that seems cool, because that was the thing that was awesome about like Brothers in Arms video games.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
you were first person, but you had squads that you could command. You could command the squads around.
Exactly.
But you were the commander. Those were the best.
Yeah.
Those were so much fun.
And the graphics seem all right. They do seem a little like PUBG. They don't look like Fortnite. They aren't cartoony. Like, it is realistic looking, but they are also dealing with like mob armies.
Yeah,
so
they have to,
it's not like highly detailed, realistic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, look at what happens when ragdoll physics and sand world armies of your choosing combine.
Yeah. Have you seen that? There's a Goofy game. I forget what it's called. It's like a ragdoll game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can like just build like little armies and put them down there and just send them at each other. You can't do anything.
Oh, okay, but it's just like, let's see what happens when
go.
They...
Yeah. And it's all ragdoll physics, and they all look like they're made of those wiggle guys in front of a car dealership.
That's why I'm excited for Kingmakers, because it seems like, I don't know how much like narrative or like... I don't know what the campaign's going to be like.
Yeah, there's a campaign.
But it definitely seems like it will have that sandbox hijinks to it.
Yeah,
because, like, the blurb is, bring guns to a sword fight. How many swordsmen do you think you could take out with an AK-47? This is your chance to find out. Use assault rifles, shotguns, grenade launchers, armored SUVs, bikes, attack helos, airstrikes, and more to make sure history altering goes smoothly.
Man, this game's gonna ruin Korra when people are like, what if Robert E. Lee had an AK-47?
Simulations show that it would be a massive disaster. According to this game I set up in Kingmaker.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. But yeah, so look for that. That's coming out the upcoming quarter 2024.
That seems like a fun time.
Yeah. But that's it for my nerd alerts. Oh, sorry. Godzilla was named the police chief of Tokyo because he won an award. He won an Oscar. Godzilla Minus One won an Oscar.
Oh, yeah?
And so in honor, they made Godzilla police chief of Tokyo Station for a day. That doesn't seem like a very good idea. But yeah, it was a PR thing. They actually did. They gave him a sash and everything. It was a guy in a normal human-sized Gojira costume.
Oh, okay.
So all the people on Twitter were like, he looks smaller in person. Hilarious.
That's funny, because historically Godzilla has never really been the good guy.
He's the police's, like, nemesis. Like,
yeah. It's not like Gamera. Gamera was often the good guy.
See?
Gamera was the... protector of children and friend of children.
That's
it. He'd protect the town, and everyone would be happy when Gamera was around.
He's full of turtle meat. He's nice.
Yeah. He even had a little song. Godzilla was like, every time Godzilla shows up, it's usually bad.
And he usually takes out police.
Yeah.
Never eats them, but you know. But yeah, they made him chief for a day.
Okay. Seems like a bad idea.
Never changed, Ben.
Yeah. I know, right? Be like if some Capone movie won an Oscar and Chicago's like, Al Capone, police chief for the day. Wait a minute.
Yeah, whoever the current mob boss is. Like, we're giving you the key to the city for a day. Don't do anything bad.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
But yeah, so that'll be our silly to end out. Nerd alert.
Nerd alert seed is fully dude.
And no jokes, no pranks. All just straightforward fun stuff.
Yeah. No jokes.
Sorry, I put that tape under your mouse earlier, by the way.
Well, yeah, that was fun. I found that funny.
Let's see.
There was a, before we go, I got to tell you, there was a funny prank that you could do on old Macs. Remember they had like Apple scripts?
Yeah, yeah.
You could like just throw in there and it would do stuff.
Yeah, script kiddies, man. Yeah,
they had an Apple script you could throw on someone's Mac that would occasionally make like a bowl or some kind of animal run across the bottom of the screen. Like a little animation.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a prank to like throw that in someone's like Apple script thing. So just they'd be like, what the hell? What was that?
Nothing. What?
Yeah.
It's a glitch in the Matrix.
They saw the they also used to have like the like a the crack, the little crack in the screen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just the wallpaper though. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's not actually broken. I miss the old, like, there was that sort of nefarious, like, hijinks, shenanigans level of hackery that used to happen in the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
There was the Cookie Monster virus that was a bunch on a bunch of early Macs, and you had to type the word cookie, like, every 5 minutes, otherwise it would threaten to delete your files, and you had to keep doing that forever. Like, that was the prank and the malicious worm, but if you typed Oreo, it would stop. Like, that was the, it never actually deleted anything.
No, it didn't.
It was just annoyance. It was like, Cookie Monster's in your machine, ha ha. You didn't say the magic word. Oldest time.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, that was a great Nerd Alerts, Mikey.
I agree.
If you guys out there have any alerts you want us to nerd about, let us know. You can hit us up at Assuming Pod on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, Y, Z.
All the socials of
all
media.
The socials of the medias. You can also send us a Gmail, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Hey, Mikey, how would you like them to format the Gmail this week?
Do some research on script kiddies. Send me something that'll crash my computer. No, please don't. But yeah, throw some fun code in there. That'd be fun. fun pranks, not malicious. Yeah, fun pranks.
Some kind of gif or something.
Yeah, tell me I want a scratch off.
Can too bad. Is there still a way to make images load real slow? Because that was a prank back in the day, and we won't tell you what that was for.
That's it. The old dial-up pranks. Classic.
If you guys like what we do here, because we like what we do here, but podcasting ain't free, you can send us some ducats. Go to buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod and throw some tips in the tip jar.
Yes, please.
We want to thank you, Positrons, for listening. You're the best fans any podcast could ever have. We also want to thank That Guy Brad for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for the equipment, and Jazzar for the music. We hope you guys have a great rest of your week. We hope all the pranks that were played on you were fun pranks and not messy, malicious pranks.
Yeah. Happy April Fools!
Walk, 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 walk. Walk, walk, walk. I don't know what I'm doing right now. Bah!